Breakfast puppies?
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hi there, this is NPC. You are listening to a very special episode of Bikers, Dice, and Bars, recorded in Portland, Oregon. What you are about to hear are a few special on-the-spot interviews that we managed to wrangle up while we were at the recent GameStorm gaming convention held at the Red Lion Inn here in Portland, Oregon. That was just this past March. We ended up setting up a booth next to the WagonCon crew and grabbed a few people as they were passing by to get some recordings with them. Up ahead, you're going to hear four different interviews that we managed to pick up. Once again, we got Aaron Bowman from the WagonCon crew. Aaron joins us to talk about what he's been up to at the conventions and what his plans are for WagonCon. This episode is actually going to be releasing just before WagonCon, so you'll get a taste of things to come. We also tracked down my buddy Gray Pawn, who has joined me in several of our Hammer Crawl games, followed by an interview with Christian White, who runs Portland's local Game Night Lounge, and closing out with an interview with Rodney, the director of GameStorm this year. Anyway, as I previously mentioned, this episode is going to be coming out right before WagonCon, where our entire podcast crew is heading out to have some good times, get some games in, hang out with the locals, and get a few recordings on the feed as well. The next thing you hear from us will probably be our WagonCon special. Anyway, sit back and enjoy, and thanks for listening. This is NPC.
And this is Just Jacob, and joining us is...
Graypawn from the internet.
Graypawn from the internet. So, Graypawn, thank you for setting up to our table. We are a small podcast company, and you came with a very important question. Question, I believe, was how did NPC of Breakfast Puppies Productions and Aaron Bowman of WagonCon encounter each other in a epic session of Hammer Crawl?
Well, okay, a little bit of backstory here is I actually met Aaron running Moto Bushido, which was the game that I wrote. And Aaron, I met him. He signed up for a play of that at GameStorm a few years back, and we've been buds ever since. Hammer Crawl has become the thing that I run the most of. The one thing that I run the most these days because has some of the best stories that you tell afterwards. And Gray Pawn here is basically one of my favorite people to play Hammer Crawl with because you just grab it, embrace it wholly, incorporate it into your visceral form and then run with it.
That is, it's funny you say that because that is exactly the advice that my friend Jay here just said last time. He said that's what I taught him how to play Hammer Crawl. Because that's how you do it. You just take it and you run with it. You fully embrace it and you run with it.
Yeah. So my first experience with you playing Hammer Crawl was, I believe, so Hammer Crawl, dear listeners, if you're unfamiliar, is randomly generated 100% meat grinder dungeon crawl experience.
Yeah.
Even the characters are randomly generated before the game begins. You sit down to play, you draw the next character off the top of the stack, and them's the breaks. Go with it.
Yep.
And I think you ended up playing a cleric, and you decided that you had a bird. You were a cleric of Big Bird?
Eventually it became clear that I was a cleric of Big Bird. I think that happened mostly with the illustration once I realized I could draw a large neck to a head on top of me as my headdress. So it was a short, squat, round individual with a brightly colored feathered outfit and then the long neck and another head above it that was entirely of soft crafts like a pillow and the face of Big Bird on it.
There were some moments that I remember from that game involving you, including... a rod of command, 100 gnolls. No, a pack of gnolls being forced to do 100 jumping jacks while you slit their throats.
Yes,
a murder corridor that ended up murdering your party before it could murder the enemies.
Yeah,
and then a ride on giant leaping locusts.
Locusts. That was another excellent use of rod of command.
I think you described it as the gaming equivalent of the turn down for what video?
Pretty much. Now, I always have to step in and say when this story gets told, because the bulk of that tale, yeah, as beautiful and epic as it is, we always forget the almost vestigial prologue. Do you remember what happened in the very beginning?
No.
Because this is equally, in my mind, the magic of Hammer Crawl.
Okay.
Is you sat down and you said, all right, here's the room. It's this size, and you drew it out for us. Yeah. And you had us do some random rolls. And inside the room was no monsters and enough gold that we immediately decided to just leave and retire. Like all of our
I rolled on the wrong edition treasure table.
Oh, really? I thought it was just luck. I thought we just got it.
On the wrong edition treasure table. So I was running it as basic D&D or BX or our rule cyclopedia era. Mm-hmm. But I accidentally rolled on the AD&D treasure table. And they're very similar, but some of the letters mean different things.
Yeah.
And this one, I don't remember what the letter was, but in basic D&D, the letter means maybe some pocket lint if you're lucky.
Yeah.
But instead, in AD&D, it meant like Dragon's Trove.
Exactly. And
so they ended up finding like 600,000 gold, a buttload of platinum, a whole bunch of magical items. And they're like, and it was. The room was empty. There were no monsters.
Yeah, and there was signs of monsters. I remember, like, yeah, and we were all geared up, and you were just looking at, like, shaking your head, and we're like, oh, it's not here. It's gone.
Yeah.
It's just like it made its bed and left with its trove here, and we're like, well, the door's right there. Let's just – why don't we just take it and leave? And you were like, well, yeah, you could do that. And so we did. We retired all the characters except for Christian Griffin, author of Anima Prime.
Yeah.
He decided to come back.
But they lost all their money on failed Kickstarter. So yeah, they had to go dungeoneering again.
That's right. So he came back and it was like a whole new crew and like everybody else. And I saw that character sheet. I kept that character sheet to this day. Like that was the only time in my life I could say, yeah, I played an epic dungeon crawl where all I did was walk into a room, take my share of retirement money and leave. So that character goes down in history. That's like framed in my house. I'm like, it was the easiest I've ever won.
So that is winning at
it was
gaming.
It was winning at best.
The question that was initially presented before we started recording was, yes, about Aaron and history with Hammer Crawl.
Yes.
Specifically the half ogre baseball team. Now, don't misunderstand. Don't mishear what I'm saying. It wasn't baseball. It was baseball. The official most popular sport of the Hammer Crawl game world, involving murder pillars. Each team has multiple murder pillars. They have several lizards that are tied to those pillars that will eat you if you get too close. They each have a shortstop because of a technicality in the rule, in that you can only intercept and tackle the shortest player on the team.
Oh my god.
So normally the game is restricted to half ogres, but they changed the laws to allow each team to have one token dwarf.
Oh, nice.
And that dwarf is the shortstop that runs around and tries to distract all the other defenders. Until the dwarf is stopped, you can't stop the actual ball carrier. Yeah. Which your half ogres had just beat each other up.
Yeah, this tracks. This sounds so like good game design.
This happened because this was, again, last year at GameStorm. We randomly roll everything, and I had a stack of four half ogres and a wizard. No, it's three half ogres, a dwarf, and a wizard. So they're like, what? Maybe it was four half ogres. It was a four half ogres, a dwarf, and a wizard. Doug the wizard. Who they decided was their manager or something.
Makes sense.
So we're setting it up. They're like, how do we know each other? And Aaron's like, it's the baseball team. And the whole adventure was them breaking into the lair of their rival team so they could fuck it up. Every time they go into a new room, they're like, let's carve our team rules, your rules.
This is better than 90% of the modules I've read. Right? Just like off the dome. This is already instantly better.
The question I have is, what was their team's name?
The Bears?
The Bears.
The Bears, I think. I think they were just the Bears. Yeah.
And they were more ogres, I'm taking it.
No, yeah, half ogres.
Half ogres
in Hammer Crawl are I don't like using orcs as like the monster race, so yeah, I went with a half ogre, so it's more of a monstrous type of character. And the half ogres in Hammer Crawl are berserkers.
Okay.
If they get hurt, they have to go berserk. Yeah. Or there's a chance they're going to go berserk. A very high chance.
Yeah.
Mm. And when they go berserk, they have a list of targets that they must fight in order of priority.
Yeah.
Starting with being the closest, strongest enemy.
That's hands down one of the most fun versions of Hammer Crawl is when you get a mostly homogenous group.
Yeah.
Because you never get 100%. You never get like, oh, here's all your ogres. It's always a bunch of ogres and a halfling. It's, you know, it's all wizards and a bard. And, you know, and then.
Well, we did that. You were in a game where we were all wizards.
Yeah.
It was all wizards and a thief. And they decided it was bring your kid to the dungeon today.
Yes. That was also one. You know, it's funny. Like, in that weird hazy area between absolute comedy and like full metal awesomeness, I did get to do in that game something I've been wanting to do my entire life, not in real life, in fictional life, I should say, which was when you introduced the Medusas and I had that character and I was like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to make it out of this. So for the group to help them survive, I closed my eyes running forward and grabbed one of the Medusas and then wrapped my arms and legs around her arms and then opened my eyes to see her face and turn to stone and therefore...
And then you like, drowned her.
Yeah. And then like even better, she was in water. So like I just became a stone statue gripping her like a safety...
Way to go out like a boss.
It was nice. Really great. It was full metal. It was just like,
This death is just Jacob endorsed.
Good. That's why I love the game. It started as a fun joke, just something that I was wasting time at GameStorm a few years back.
It's a good joke.
And then my wife was like, you need to do something with this. I was like, oh, I don't really know if I'm feeling it. She's like, you need to do something with this. And so here we are. And I'm glad I've kept doing it.
It's epic. Yeah.
Poppy, the world thanks you.
So, Graypon, I hope you're going to be joining us for the game tomorrow.
I'm definitely going to be observing.
Okay.
I've been having... health issues, so we'll see what happens. Okay. But I will be at 5 watching. Where's that at? Which room?
In the panel room.
Okay.
Which is in the Pendleton room downstairs.
Downstairs, Pendleton room.
Downstairs, Pendleton room.
That's where it's gonna be at.
Good, good.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. So Aaron, do you listen to podcasts?
A few of them. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Like what?
I really enjoy Bobby Lee's podcast called Tiger Belly. It's him and his friends and his girlfriend, Kalila, who's fantastic. And it's just hilarious. And they bring on like famous stand-up comedians and just talk shop and stuff. It's hilarious. It's really, really lighthearted too, which I enjoy. Yeah.
Bobby Lee's a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Right?
Fantastic stand-up comedian. Yeah. Yeah.
Did he have a Netflix special? Or
no, he actually has kind of been too scared to do any specials. He's been approached by a couple different groups, but he has decided not to do a special. He's a very on-the-fly comedian, so to sit down and work on an hour, I think for him, would really freak him out. Yeah.
So, obviously, Tiger Belly with Bobby Lee.
Yes.
What else?
So I'm into miniatures a lot, and there's this great miniatures podcast about modern military miniatures called
SITREP. Tell me more. You have my attention.
Okay. Yes. So it's called SITREP. SITREP. Yeah. Okay. And I really enjoy it because what they do is they take modern warfare and they break it down into what different miniature companies could do with that war. So for instance, they've done a four-part series on any Israeli conflict since 1945. So they've taken it through and said, okay, if you're going to do this Battle of the Sinai, you want to go Flames of War.
Yes.
If you want to do like special forces, you would go with like Spectre or you would go with somebody else. So it's a really fun podcast. And the way they break down historical information is it's really digestible and interesting. And you're constantly locked in with them. There's no downtime with it. Those are the two I mainly listen to. Every once in a while, like everyone, I'll grab a Joe Rogan, depending on his guest.
Mm-hmm.
I like him as a podcaster, but I'm more interested in the guests that he brings on. So I listen to, every once in a while, Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hey, that's a great podcast.
It's a really fabulous podcast. Do you play the home drinking game with Bikers, Dice, and Bars?
I do not.
I didn't know we had one. I can't drink.
So I don't partake in any alcohol.
Well,
so.
You know, many people don't know we have one, but the rules are secret, and you have to show up to one of our live events to get a printout of it.
Ooh, nice.
Well, I don't have that printout, and I'm at a live event.
Maybe I'll give you one.
Yeah. Super secret. Even members of the podcast don't know about it. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
It's not members only. It's members maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly. You got
fans definitely. Members maybe.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So, Aaron, what are you doing here at GameStorm? Because that's where we're at, right?
That's GameStorm? Where we're at. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, well, what I'm doing is I'm trying to strike this balance in life of actually shilling out my own gaming convention and actually having fun at a game convention, which is becoming harder and harder to do. The more and more I show up to GameStorm, the more and more I feel like I'm just, it's another day at work. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to strike a better balance of actually getting into some games that I want to get into. And then, of course, talking about Wagon Con to other conventions.
What's this Wagon Con?
So Wagon Con is, I'm just going to roll with it. I'm just going to roll with it with his snarky assholeism. I'm just going to roll with it. It is the greatest gaming convention on the face of the earth. It was conceived by multiple geniuses and executed by a cast of thousands highly motivated gamers, or there was three of us and now there's five of us, however you want to look at it. It's in the Dalles. It's the first weekend in May. We get around 200 people. It's like small, intimate, get to know friends, game all weekend long, and just have a blast. And we always have awesome special guests. It's just a good time, man. It's a very good time.
Yes. Yeah. One of our favorites cons. I think we officially have declared it our home con.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they like give us stuff. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fronting some Wagon Con gear right now.
You're looking good, too.
Yeah, it looks good.
Looking really good.
Good shirt. Yeah.
Again, I just want to put this out here. I shared this with one of your co-coordinators for the event. I greatly appreciate the fact that so much of your clothing merch is cut to fit human beings.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Whether it's a human being who's like more like thin and narrow, or something for someone who's more broad, you run the gamut. There's
we do run the gamut, and if you look at the reason why that is if you look at our board, we run the gamut, male and female, and we're accepting of all. So we are like, you know what? What we hate is going to cons and they have three sizes of t-shirts and one size of hoodie. That I've run into that in quite a few cons and just went, what? Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're quote unquote don't fit the box, you don't get a piece of merch. That's some bullshit. So we said, you know, get every size up to 3X. Sometimes we special order 5X for people because we love them. Mm-hmm. And we go all the way down to small so that kids, we actually have like really cool kids show up to our con.
I know.
And so some of them wear small. And so we're like, we got to have it for them too. So
is Squirrel coming back this year?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Squirrel's coming back again this year. The infamous Squirrel. He's maybe only 3 feet tall, but has the energy of a thousand burning suns. Yeah.
I mean, you probably could get a discount on the hall you're in if you just had them turn off the power and hook Squirrel up to a treadmill.
Gigantic wheel. Yo, yeah. And
or
he would.
Just have Squirrel ride around the convention on one of those little bicycles, but attached that has one of the built-in power generators.
Yeah. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. And he would, too.
Yeah, yeah.
We gave him, if every 3 hours we hit him up with a Coke, you know, or a Pepsi, that kid would go for days and just
We've
not
created
stop.
Semi-perpetual energy.
Exactly. So, exactly.
Obviously, when we come up to Wagon Con, I need to pack a case of Jolt Cola.
Yes.
Jolt Cola, if you're looking to sponsor a podcast. Sorry. Running gag.
So, Aaron, I noticed that you were paging through a book just a minute ago.
Yeah.
What book was that?
One of my rules with going to cons is every time I go to a con, I have to try a new game that is very much out of my wheelhouse. It's a very good rule. And it keeps your brain going. And it keeps you interested in different games. So this year, I saw that they were doing Starfinder, which if you know anything about D&D, there's the version Pathfinder, which is a souped-up version of 3.5 D&D.
Yeah, they call it 3.75 in some circles.
Yes, absolutely. So I tried it, and I'm going to be honest, I hated it. But I was like, you know what, the Starfinder, I really like the art. It's like super, you know, it's a good mashup of fantasy and sci-fi.
And to clarify, you hated Pathfinder.
I hated Pathfinder. Gotcha. So what happened was I tried out Starfinder and just I wasn't really sold on the system, but let me tell you, the people who actually demoed the game to me were freaking awesome. And I learned a lot about demoing a game from them and character creation for them, how to make it fun and integrated and stuff. Because sometimes you can have people show you how to make a character in a game and you just want to pull your eyeballs out.
Yes.
So they did a great job and we had a lot of fun. So I decided, you know what, if not for the system, at least for the people, I'll pick up a copy of the book and just maybe see what it's like. Yeah.
Speaking of character creation, wanting to make people pull their eyes out, Jacob, how's Hole treating you?
Hole is now my, well, update for our longtime listeners. Hole still ranks as my worst experience on the podcast until last night.
Whoa, do tell.
What happened last night, Jacob?
Yeah,
give us the rundown. So on Bikers, Dice, and Bars, longtime listeners, you might have heard one of the many times where NPC and just Jacob and sometimes Xander have bandied around on the mics a strong desire to do a character jam around Nightbane.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I heard there was a Nightbane jam last night.
It was amazing. You should have been there, man.
Yeah.
So for the uninitiated, what is Nightbane?
Nightbane is a Palladium system, okay. Modern day.
I quit listening, but that's all right.
Modern day, as in 1995 era, Palladium modern conspiracy horror game.
Oh, okay.
But it's like horror superheroes. So You make a human character who, until one pivotal day in their life, mm-hmm. in the middle of some kind of a crucial world-shaking crisis, you learn that you can transform into a monster form.
Oh.
And it's really cool. The best part is, if you play it the right way.
Yeah, okay.
You don't create your monster first. First, you create your character.
Human. Yeah,
then
sure.
Then you play the game, and then you discover what you transform into through play. And it's all random.
Oh.
Random roll tables. Mm-hmm. We had everything from an elfin person with big teeth, and that was it,
mm-hmm.
to a woman who was unearthly beautiful, covered in screaming mouths, and had angel-like devil wings. And then finally, a translucent, crystalline, six-limbed bear.
Yeah.
So all of this is randomly rolled.
Now, yeah. I am not a huge fan of the Palladium system overall.
Yes.
I put in a hard, hard, hard exception for Nightbane. I mean, this game owns its hat tip to Clive Barker. It's a
very
great
cool,
game. It's a fabulous game. I have been looking forward to us doing this from when we started talking about it, back when we were talking about it before we actually started recording the first episode.
So what happened last night, NPC? Like, why let the friend hang?
Because Jacob abandoned us.
Oh.
You did? Oh, do tell. What happened?
Well, I you know, we are here at GameStorm,
yeah.
And I got my panel schedule.
Oh, got it.
They had dumped all of my panels onto, not all of them, but a big chunk of my panels onto Thursday night. And so rather than being with the crew at the studio recording for Bikers, Dice, and Bars in this wonderful game, you know, character jam that I'd been looking so forward to.
Yeah.
I was doing panels that I really enjoyed, knowing that across town, some dear friends of mine were stabbing me in the back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we had a good time doing
it,
too.
You can feel that through space and time, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's some hate on that.
Yeah.
So I've segued a little bit. Sorry, I've interrupted and brought us to Nightbane, but I wanted, did you have anything else to say about Starfinder? About your experiences with the character creation?
Not really. I just really enjoyed the people. Sometimes role-playing games, you can, if the system isn't your gig, if the setting isn't your gig, if something, but if you're with the right group of people, it makes the game.
I have a question for you. Do you think that in, say, roughly maybe about a month's time, you're going to be comfortable enough with the rules to maybe guide some people through some character creation?
No.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. I don't like systems. I've never liked systems. The other members of our board, I'll call us that, our board, I'm using air quotes, are very good with systems. And I tend to be the guy that comes up with the fun, imaginative character kind of off the wall, but is somewhat like the glue of the group. I fit this weird niche. So that's where I'm really good, strong as a player. As a DM, I'm really good storytelling collaboratively. Don't make me learn a system. Don't make me help you make your character. Yeah.
I'm with you. I used to be that guy who could just sit and read pounds upon pounds of RPG books.
Yes.
Now, if a new game comes out, I'll look at the art. Does the art inspire me? I might throw some money on a Kickstarter.
Exactly.
But I'm not going to read that damn book.
Yeah.
if I buy something for looks, it'll sit on the shelf, or I might, dare I say it, tear pages out and hang them as art.
Ooh, you know? Wow.
Because yes. If it's a game, I'm never going
to
run.
Yeah. What I tend to find is that I have populated my gaming groups with people who are very left-brained, mechanics-driven people. And that's the enjoyment they get out of RPGs, which is fantastic. It's not what I get out of it. So to find a group where you have two or three of those that can also role-play is a real blessing. So I hold on to them and give them my books and make them learn the system. Yes.
Nice.
But thank you for asking. Yeah. Okay.
Quick question.
Sure.
Since we got you on the mics, what is the biggest things that you're looking forward to at WagonCon this year?
Oh, my God. What am I not looking... You know what? I'm going to sound sappy and stupid. I love the people that come to WagonCon. It's become its own community. And that's a community of people who respect each other, who treat each other with respect, and who are very inclusive. Sometimes when cons get to a certain size, they lose that.
Yes.
And I think we've held on to that. And our whole ethos as a board is we don't want to go above 300 people. And the reason why is any convention we've gone to over 300 people, you see the society and the community start to break down. So we're very cognizant of that. I said when we came up with this idea and I was talking to the board, we cannot go over 300 because I don't want to run a con where we lose sight of the people. Mm-hmm. So I'm just looking forward to seeing the people. Whatever games, sure, I always get excited about the games. Whatever, you know, cool special guests we have, I always get excited about that. But truly, it's the community that shows up. Yeah.
And that's what I tell people when I talk about why I love Wagon Con so much.
Yeah.
It's a convention where you can show up on the first day knowing no one and leave on the last day knowing everyone.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, when we construct it in that way, for instance,
construct?
Aha. Uh-huh, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. In our book of construction. So we always put out the first Friday night that you get there. We rent out. This year we're renting out a pizza and beer joint. And we ran out the whole thing and set it up as gaming. And the reason why is people show up, like you said, NPC, they show up, they don't know each other. You spend one night eating pizza and drinking beer with people, you get to know them. You get to know them. And then, you know, then you're in a game with them the next day. And then you already have a touchstone where you're just bantering back and forth. The games get better. The community gets better. So it's like really important to us to build on that.
You know, just to say again, we are looking forward once again to coming out to WagonCon. Yeah. It is the con that we are nearest and dearest to our hearts.
Oh, thank you, guys.
You know, many of the people on the podcast are going through small life changes with their living situations at the moment, and we're literally constructing the moves around WagonCon.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. And I want to thank you guys for coming out and being so positive and being part of that community. It's sometimes when you bring special guests out, they get it or they don't. You know what I mean? Like either they're in it to be part of a community or they're there to shill a product. And you guys have always come out and represented the best in gaming every time you've been there. So I appreciate you guys coming out. It's been awesome.
Fist bump.
Yes.
thanks for having us.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on your podcast, guys.
Yeah, of course. And, of course, we will have you on the mics at WagonCon.
Oh, heck yeah. Do it.
Well, I'll see you for the rest of the weekend, and we'll definitely see you there, too.
Thanks.
One of the reasons we wanted to talk to you is we've actually brought up your place several times on the air already.
I apologize for anything that we have done in the past, present, or at
it's never been. I mean, the only thing that you might have to apologize for is permanently hooking my sweetie on pickle shots.
Oh yeah.
Tell us your name.
Christian White. Own Game Night Lounge in Portland, Oregon.
How long has Game Night Lounge been open at this point?
2 years.
Two years.
Yeah, we just had our second year anniversary.
Excellent, excellent. And what part of town is it in again?
It's over in the Elliott neighborhood on Williams Avenue, basically North Portland.
Right, right. So why on earth did you decide to open up a place that is a bar with some food and games?
So why open up a board game bar slash sort of cafe? Yeah, I know. They are so new that I don't think anyone really knows not to. So you might as well, right?
Right.
It's a hard thing to do, but I don't know. You just gotta have a passion for it, and you gotta want to like kind of encourage the geeky community to kind of get out of their basements and come to a certain place and just have fun and realize that they're just regular people. And we actually find out that the most people we do attract is kind of like the average Joe that knows really nothing about board games except Monopoly and things like that. So it's great for us to be able to kind of like launch them into the board game world.
Right.
And they always come back.
So one of those things that I found very striking first time I was there was the game library you have there.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you... So tell us a bit about it.
It took... Let's see. Before we opened, we collected about 400 board games. And, you know, it's everything under the sun. So, yeah, there's Monopoly and some of the classic games. And then we bought a lot of the new ones, and that was just out of pocket. And then we also tried to grab a lot of the rare ones because we wanted people that, like, had played stuff back in the day, like Talisman or the old school Fireball Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted them to be able to come to game night, see those, and just, like, be forced, you know, to be able to play them again. And that's absolutely what we did.
Right. And your staff tends to be really knowledgeable about the contents of the library.
For the most part, yeah.
I've seen them do a really, really great job of curate games for folks who didn't know what they wanted to play, you know, or were feeling stuck in a rut and wanted to branch out.
Well, myself and Andrew, which is my business partner, Andrew Pitt, we know many of the games, maybe 75% of the game. There's no way we could know all because it's just, you can't keep all those rules in your head. And then we train the staff to know at least maybe like 20, mm-hmm. 25, give or take. And mainly the easier ones, like the intro stuff. So they can basically have anyone come in and, you know, you can give them a little something that they might enjoy.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that I've heard other people talk about a lot.
And here it comes.
Here it comes. your theme nights. You uh-huh. have themes really predicated a lot around building and reinforcing the community. Tell us about those.
One of the biggest ones we have is probably orcs, orcs, orcs. There's exclamation points after all the orcs. And that one is our RPG event, and that's run by Orcs, Orcs, Orcs. And that one is probably the largest event we do. It's every single table that we have has a DM. There's about 4 or 5 people per table. It's a catered event, so we have hors d'oeuvres, main courses, desserts, and campaigns that run about 6 to 7 hours, give or take. And we also have custom cocktails and drinks that we prepare specifically for each one of those nights. So each time that we have an orcs, they have a theme, and we try and run with that theme and make it our own.
Great.
Yeah.
I got to make a note here that your custom cocktails that you just have on the menu, they're just the default menu, are fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Your food is why I keep coming
back. Yes. So Law, our cook, he does very well in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And we have a tiny kitchen.
Yeah.
But he just knows how to, like, take everything to its fullest and make, like, the best menu that he possibly could.
I am a lover of a fine Cuban sandwich.
Yeah, yes. Our Cubano.
The Cubano is so good that every time I go into game night, I look at your custom, your specials, your whatever, the ephemeral meals that are being offered at that night of that week.
Mm.
I'm like, but if I eat one of those, I won't be eating a Cubano.
And you can't have. Yeah, can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And I gotta have the Cubano.
Yeah, it's like that one, like maybe like one Chinese store you go to, Chinese restaurant. You know you love that one thing, but what's this other thing? This mysterious odd thing.
So I'm gonna point out my solution to the Cubano problem, and it's go in, pick out a real long game,
mm-hmm.
eat the Cubano first,
mm-hmm.
and then have your end of game, after game snack, meal, whatever. You have to choose one that's 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah.
Embrace the fact that you're there for food and fun.
Yeah. Have a Twilight Imperium party there sometime.
Yeah, ooh. No, that's, we do have Twilight Imperium. It doesn't get played that often, but
yeah.
You know, yeah, if people are playing it, they, you know, that they're going to be eating one or two meals while they wait, like
probably
on Monday.
Probably a lot of drinks.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that is true. What would you say then is sort of a masterpiece of your collection?
Like, well, I mean, probably the old school Fireball Island is one. Nice. That's definitely, like, the most, like, eye-catching. And, like, everybody knows it or, like, has seen it in their past or remembers the great commercials. 80s commercials.
That yeah. Crossfire, really.
Yeah.
Crossfire. I remember the most.
So Crossfire, we actually had to retire because the main problem with Crossfire and things that involve marbles is they have marbles, apparently. Yeah, and like having marbles and people that like might have had a couple beers like walking around, you know, like it can be treacherous. So every time we hear a marble like hit the floor, like we would all stop what we're doing and then like scan the room and find one marble just so one person doesn't die.
Yeah. You do other theme nights as well, though, and community-centered nights.
We do an LGBTQ night, and that is the second Wednesday of the month, and that... a portion of all the proceeds goes to help the Q Center, which is over on Mississippi Street.
And thank you for doing that. In other aspects of my life, I end up working with the Q Center, helping people connect to resources.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you connect with them and support them, it's just wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, we're all about the community. And so giving back to the community is just like something we didn't even have to second guess. We're just like, let's just do this night and let's give something to the, you know, to the Q Center.
My wife and I have gone to a couple of your date nights.
Yeah.
I've actually found two-player games there that I had no idea existed, and I later bought them.
Yeah, so two-players is like a kind of a difficult thing. Two-player games, there's not a lot of them, at least the ones that have depth. Like, they'll always be, you know, like some really simple ones. But, like, some of our favorites are Onitama is a great one, Odin's Ravens, but... Like, we're always on the lookout for more two-player games. So if anyone ever finds, like, some really great two-player games, let us know, because we'll definitely add them.
So one of the times we actually mentioned you on the air, I think, was at our Valentine's Day episode.
Oh, we talked about date night.
Yeah. We talked about date night, and one of the two-player games I brought up and the company that manufactured it was Odin's Ravens, which I and my sweetie tripped across at your place. And I proceeded to look at and find that there was this entire company that did primarily nothing but two-player games. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the fact that you're introducing that style of gaming to the world is real, real good.
Yeah, yeah.
I ended up picking up Nia.
Nia. And that one's really light.
Yeah,
and that's actually based, the pictures on that are based on an older Japanese game called Hanafuda, which is kind of like a matching card style
game that Nintendo started with.
Is that? Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did hear about that. Really? Yeah.
Nintendo is first and foremost a Hanafuda company.
Yeah. My parents were actually in Hawaii. They mailed me a whole bunch of Hanafuda sets. The rules are so complex. It's not an easy game.
Brother.
Yeah.
Mike gave me a Nintendo Hanafuda deck.
Really? Yeah. All right.
Yeah, he's done illustrations for me for various games that I've designed.
I think he did the one for GameStorm, like originally, like the little guy. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure.
He may or may not have.
Oh, yeah. May or may not. Quotes, unquotes.
So what are you looking forward to this weekend at GameStorm?
Well, really, I'm here just to kind of poke around and see what games people are playing. I've heard really good things about the game Wingspan, and that one is sold out.
Yeah,
you can't find a copy of that. Yeah, so I really want to get my hands on that just to play it and see if we can add it to the game night library.
I could have sworn I saw it over at Rainy Day, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Somewhere.
I will call my brother because he works over there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You didn't know that? Yeah. You can go over there and bug him. I do all the time.
Yeah.
I just walk in randomly and I like force him to teach me games. Yeah, he hates it and loves it.
It's family bonding time. Teach.
Yeah. Yeah. That's basically what it is. Or like, but we can like just talk about games forever, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, brotherly love.
Beyond looking for that specific game What else do you do when you're here? I mean, I noticed you came up carrying some literature. Was that from the dealer's room?
Yeah, or? From the dealer's room. I just talked with them and saw what was interesting. I got the Dragon Tax here. I got the Dark Side Seattle double dot fixer. And that one looked interesting because it was kind of like a post-apocalyptic cyberpunk future.
You
and,
have my attention, sir.
Yeah. And like, I don't generally read stuff like that, but it just seemed too cool to pass up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, apparently, like, they have several books, but each one is a storyline of a specific person. So this one, I'm assuming, is some sort of doctor or perhaps like a, say, chief negotiator. I don't know, something.
And a ranger.
Yeah, and like a ranger, yeah.
Finding, especially like author-presented, mm-hmm. Small press, that individual writer who's got a table in a in a small local con, mm-hmm. buying their stuff.
Yeah. Because you don't really, like, I don't know, a lot of those small print things, like, it's really hard to try and, like, get a hold of these things without going to things like this and actually talking to people and seeing what's good and picking people's brains.
Yeah. No, and so, where I was going with that is, so you have a third one here, Road to Chaos.
Yeah, Road to Chaos. So I don't know too much about this
one. I see a trunk and eyeballs.
Yeah, trunk, eyeballs, a cage. It looks kind of Cthulhu-esque, but I did my least amount of research, but for $5, I was not going to pass that up.
$5, that's a great value for $5.
Well, there was like a misspelling on the back description, and he said just because of that, like, I could just have it for $5.
Oh, nice.
So. Right. Yeah, my negotiating powers are up.
So, getting back to the business end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. give us three reasons why people should come to your place.
Why you should come to game night?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have the cocktail situation down pat.
Mm-hmm.
With 900 games, like, you're always going to find something. And if you don't know anything about games, we can show you quite a bit. And that's the greatest thing. And that's actually one of the most rewarding things for me is I get to show people games that, you know, that I know they're going to love. I just have to, like, present it to them in the right way.
Well, to that list, I think with NPC's full backing, we're going to add number 4, a kickin' Cubano.
And, it's really good.
And thank you for taking some time
and no problem.
Jumping on the mics. And we'll look forward to talking to you in the future.
All right. Hope to see you around, guys.
This is Just Jacob at the lobby of GameStorm GameCon. I'm here with Rodney, chair of this year's GameStorm. Rodney, tell me how GameStorm's going.
It's going really smooth this year. We haven't had any problems whatsoever.
Great.
Really?
Well, really?
Wow.
I
couldn't tell if that was sarcasm or not.
No. I had occasional little miscommunications and whatnot, but that's normal. I mean, nothing. We've been running really smooth this year.
Cool.
What are you most excited for this weekend?
Running my GURPS SWAT game because it's so different. And also running my Fudge anime game, which is also really different.
You were telling me before we got on the mics about your GURPS SWAT game.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the premise very intriguing. Can you go through it and explain, you know, when people think SWAT, they think cops with guns kicking down doors and
busting,
you know,
teenagers busting playing video games
shooting up terrorists in downtown LA. You take a little bit of a different tack on that. And so go through it and describe the premise of it a little bit.
Well, in your typical role-playing game, which is what I'm used to playing and running as a game master, it's all about killing orcs and renting their experience points from them, you know. And
fascinating.
That's usually pretty much what most role-playing games are about, you know, renting orcs in twain and gathering the experience points from their essence and continuing to advance your own personal selfish gains and goals.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's pretty much the premise of most RPGs. With GURPS SWAT, we take a completely different take on that. In law enforcement, with the CERT team and SWAT team, their goal, their job, is to preserve life and to keep people from discharging their firearms and to keep themselves from discharging their firearms. And it's to de-escalate whatever the situation is. And in the GURPS role-playing game, it's exactly what we're doing. We're using a very crunchy tactical game system where everybody has 10 hit points. Period. It doesn't matter how good you are or bad you are. You've got like 10, 12 hit points. If you're a little tougher, you get 12 hit points, whatever. And if guns start shooting, people get dead. Mm-hmm. And so your goal in GURPS SWAT is to not get dead and not get other people dead. And so you're going to come into a scenario or a situation where you're going to be looking at somebody who's amped up for some reason, and it's your job as a SWAT person to bring him back down.
Now, NPC and I have some experience with similar things where playing games such as, we were both in a Stars Without Number game and a couple others where, there's a trope to a science fiction space opera-esque game. And, you can do the Fighting the Great Imperium or that sort of thing. The group we were with was doing this independent free trader thing, except we were this weird mix of goody two shoes and hard nosed business people. Yeah. It was just bizarre. And so, putting the traditional narrative on its head is always nice to see.
And tying that into what you were just saying, there is Stars Without Number also has that mechanic where when the guns come out, you don't want to get hit.
Yeah.
You're probably going to die. It's most sci-fi has those tropes of lasers flying all the time, pew, 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 pew. But in something like Stars Without Number, and imagine with what you're describing with GURPS, it's like, okay, the guns are out. Crap, we got to take cover and find a way to de-escalate this situation or get out of here. Mm-hmm.
Changing gears back to what special events are you looking forward to for the rest of the weekend?
Well, coming up, there's this event called Hammer Crawl some professional actors are coming in to record themselves playing a role-playing game with the audience. So that would be interesting to see.
I can't even say this with a straight face.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Those are kind words for, not professional at all. 100% randomly generated with, we pull the audience up and make them play and die.
Yep.
Kind of a hot seat style game. Yeah.
There's also Theater Thanos or
Arcanos?
Arcanos. Yeah. Theater Arcanos. Is it? They're going to be right after you guys.
And they're from California, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And they're doing a live improv game type thing as well.
We actually hope to maybe get one of the organizers of that on the mics later today. So once their current session wraps up. So,
and we have Jason Bowman down here from Paizo. He's here.
He's the guy sitting next to me on the panel, right?
Yeah. Jason Bowman came down from Seattle this morning. He put the Pathfinder 2.0 Beastery to bed yesterday evening.
Oh.
And so everything's off to the printer now. Pathfinder 2.0 is done, and he's got this look of relief and elation on his face. And
you say relief, and it looked like exhaustion to me.
Yeah, well, that too. Kind of a combination of the above. And so he's walking around here. He's in panels right now, but he'll be demoing his game tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow evening. And we're looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to being in that. That'll be interesting.
Oh, you're going to be playing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, excellent.
Is it like a members-only exclusive game or something?
We started off that way, and nobody else wanted to play. We had like 5 people sign up out of all of the staff, because all the staff's busy at the times we ended up having to schedule it. And so we opened it up to anybody else, first come, first serve, to get a ticket to the RPG director. So if you want to get on one of those demo games, all you gotta do is find Ron, and he'll give you a ticket, and you're in.
Right on.
Excellent.
Then when he runs out of tickets, then that's that.
So this recording is probably going to drop after the con wraps up. Mm-hmm. So you've been involved with GameStorm for quite a while now, right?
I've been involved since 2002.
2002.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Since GameStorm 2002, which would have been 2001 for the planning.
So at this point, your con experience is old enough to vote.
Well, yeah, and I also was the vice chair for RadCon the very first year they operated. So I've been around for a while.
What keeps you coming back to GameStorm?
Well, it's here.
Local is good, yes.
You know, and if I work, I don't have to pay for a ticket.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Portland is starting to have more game cons come up. Mm-hmm. And what makes you commit to this one as opposed to some of the other ones?
It's larger. It has an ethos that I really appreciate. We value fun above everything else. That is a core value of GameStorm. Yeah. The core value is not education. It's not designers. It's not gamesmanship. It's not winning or losing. The core value for GameStorm is fun. And once you understand that everything we do, everything we drive at GameStorm is going to be derived around that core concept of fun, that gives you a little more insight as to why I think GameStorm is the best game con, period. Awesome. Because we have that as a hard and fast core value. We don't issue tickets for individual events. We don't. There's a lot of things that when you go to other game cons, you look at them and you're like, that's annoying. And we do the opposite.
That was a new experience for me when I first attended GameStorm. I think it was 2006, maybe. 2006 or 2007, because I had only ever gone to ticketed cons, and I hated it. Because you had to pay for the tickets, and if you missed the game or the game canceled, then you have to deal with the hassle of either finding a new game or getting your money back, and sometimes they wouldn't give your money back, and it's a racket.
One of the things, too, is we also embrace technology at GameStorm. We've always been trying to be forward-thinking with how we're going to run the game con, and we've got a scheduling system that's set up online. GMs log in. They put in what they want to run. Then you, later on, after we get it all scheduled, you log in to your account and you sign up to play in whatever you want to play. This is all done weeks in advance of the actual convention. This is all done online. Almost all of our memberships are sold online. Mm-hmm. We usually only sell maybe 5%. At the convention.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, especially this year, because I've been a longtime GameStorm attendee, and it's Friday, and normally at Friday, at this time of the day, I would expect to see the reg desk, which is across the lobby from where we're sitting now, buried in people. And I was talking to the reg staff yesterday, and one of them who's been with us for quite a while, in fact, he's the current head of Reg, said he had never seen so many pre-Reg badges come off the printers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great that people are embracing that and getting in and getting to the fun as fast as possible, like you were talking about.
I think it's also great from my experience. I'm used to Friday being a little bit more of a ghost town because a lot of people haven't taken off work. They're going to come on Saturday or Sunday. The place is bustling.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, what, the second year GameStorm has been in this hotel?
I believe so. I think third, actually.
Third.
Yeah.
You know, the first year was kind of rocky when you guys moved over from the Hilton in Vancouver to the Red Lion here on Janssen Beach in Portland. And it's been nice to see the tweaks that the con has made each and every year. And one of the best parts of that, I think, is how, especially under your chairing the con, there's been some pretty dramatic rearrangement of where certain events are held.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like such a good, strong move. And I've heard no complaints from anybody about the physical rearrangement of space. From the organized role play tracks seem to be very happy that they get to have their own zones and not be dumped on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
The general role play folks are very, very happy that they're in that bigger room with higher ceilings, with better sound absorbency. You know, the panel room is great. I mean, we have a PA system in the panel room, but the acoustics in there are solid enough where we've had one soft voice panelist who still didn't need to be mic'd. And so it's the physical space changes have been really, really good this year. I mean, that's a compliment to you because I know you put in some work to that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, most of that work was done by Aaron, although I did have a lot of input into certain things. Like I wanted to make sure the RPGs got moved around and separated because that was a big concern of mine, and we were able to do that. So I was real happy about that. We also moved the console gaming up here to Hayden, which is a much better room for console gaming. Yes. So and they're happy that they're in there, and they've got their physical internet drop now and all that other fun stuff that I made sure happened this year.
And it's a much more immediately inviting space for the console gaming. Yeah. As you walk right past it all the time, people can drop in, play something, and leave. Mm-hmm. Whereas I remember last year, I kind of forgot it was where it was.
Yep. So, kind of closing up on the conversation a bit, what would you say, give me three reasons why someone should come to GameStorm next year?
Well, the number one reason you should come to GameStorm is because we're fun.
Awesome.
That is our ethos. That is our number one value. And because it's our number one value, we want to make sure you, as a member, and we don't sell tickets to GameStorm. When you come to GameStorm and register, you are considered to be a member of the convention. You're part of us. You're one of us. And as a member, we want to make sure you have fun while you're here. That'd be the number one reason. Number two, you're going to get exposed to a variety of games you've never seen, heard of, never seen before. And we encourage people to step out of their comfort zone and out of the games that they normally play and play something completely different. And number three would be people. You're going to meet old friends that you haven't seen in a long time that only show up to GameStorm. And you're also going to meet new friends you're going to game with that you're going to want to game with again next year at the next GameStorm.
Awesome. Well, Rodney, thank you again for all the hard work you put in as chair of this convention. GameStorm is in the home city of, you know, Bikers, Dice, and Bars podcast and all of the rest of the Breakfast Puppies shows. You know, and thank you and the staff so much. And thank you again for helping us put on Hammer Crawl this weekend.
Oh, well, thank you for coming. Yeah. It's my pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for joining us, friends.